All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Mike McKenna, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Riggs? What are you saying today, buddy?
Excited to be here.
Yeah, dude, yawning and everything. he's jacked.
Not yet. I am jacked.
No, I know. What's up, man?
This is it. Happy to be here. It's a beautiful day in the studio.
It's nice. We're in the stew. We got Debo, baller in the house. Debo's excited about Vancouver's start. It's not crazy, but he's happy. Right, Debo?
Yeah,
he's very happy.
How can you not be happy?
I know. You should be. We both missed a game this weekend. Men's Jeez. League. I wasn't able
should
to make
be all
it.
All over your ass for that.
No, dude, you didn't even reply to the group text.
Yeah, I was texting with Rob. Said can't make it.
Okay. Well, I had a legit excuse. Elvis was playing. Wow. He's the PHC. His boys. We swept the weekend 2-0.
Where was that?
That was
Long
fun.
Island.
We were up in Long Island. Saw Aaron Asham.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
Yeah,
the old Aaron Asham grin.
Yeah, yeah, that grinsy. A couple people say, "What's wrong with him?" I'm like, "A lot," but nothing. He just smiles like that. But no, it was cool. He drove. He drove about a half hour. Came over, watched Elvie play, and Elvie was pretty pumped to see him, and was excited. Had a little pep in his step when he saw Ash. But yeah, they won both games. It was good. Good Sunday. Missed the men's league game. Philadelphia Rebels, team I work with in North American Hockey League, we swept the Northeast Generals, which was the first place team in the league.
It was all you.
Boys played well. It had a lot to do with me. I'm not going to lie, but no, boys played hard. It was really, really good hockey, too. It was a couple of the best games, honestly, since I started doing that. I did want to make a quick shout-out. I think I told you last year we were playing Northeast Generals, and one of their D-men was going back for the puck, and one of our guys, it was just a normal battle, nothing dirty about it, but they got tangled up, and this young man, Jack DeMora is his name, plays for Northeast, went into the boards, knee, broke his femur, It was tough, man. And you know, I've seen a lot of injuries in hockey, and I can kind of watch anything, but it was this poor guy. I'd never felt so bad. He was screaming.
That's a tough bone to break.
That's one of the hardest to break. Yeah. Remember Curtis Foster? Fozzie Bear had the same thing, but I actually left the bench and went up to the locker room because it made me sick that kid was in that much pain. But I was able to talk to him. He made a full recovery, played this weekend. I thought it was amazing. A great story. Stopped him after warm-ups, I think the second night, and just told him I was happy for him and everything. And he worked his ass off to come back. That's a serious, obviously, very, very serious injury. So good job for him. But I'm glad we beat you guys. We swept him 2-0, but just want a quick shout out for him because he went through a lot the last year to get back to play. So nice young man.
Yeah.
So Fly Boys 3-2-1.
Yeah.
Deserved a little better last night in Vegas, I thought.
Tough team, but very good team. Yeah. I think overall, obviously a great start.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit unassuming in the NHL. I think a lot of people were maybe a little bit doubtful on, you know, what to expect this year, but I think it certainly surprised me the way they're coming out, some of these young guys stepping up. So solid start. Obviously, it's still early, so
playing very, very hard.
Yeah,
and harder speed. To play against.
Yeah,
right. They're right in that game last night. 30. Those are the worst. You'd rather lose 2 seconds into overtime. At least you get that point. They deserve the point, if not two. Carter played great. Carter Hart played great. They all played well. Just one of those CNI shots. I thought at first it hit. Someone slid to try to block it. I can't remember forward, but it definitely went through Kutz's legs, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't think Carter ever saw it. So it just sucks with 30 seconds to go to lose.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've been on the bench for that. And you've been on the bench when you win those. So it's great when you win them, but it really sucks when you lose.
You know, I was watching that clip again this morning, that goal, and I struggle, you know, from a coaching's perspective. You know, you're told to kind of stay tight, you know, like in those situations, not come out too far. They have possession at the top of the blue line there, and they're having this the interchanging players, and you know, it's one of those where it's like I think they could have maybe pressured that puck.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Theodore gets the puck and he's got all this space now to step in.
He kind of walked down, yeah.
You know, there's a challenging place, you know, in hockey where you're trained to be aggressive, but then pump the brakes at times where you see like that play happening. It's almost like,
Were they playing zone? Did you take notice? Did you miss a switch on that? Like I saw it live.
Yeah. I think that was it. The switch was delayed where now they created the gap. I don't know. You know, I just look at these things. And I'm like, geez, how does that guy step in and have that much space?
You want to coach again?
I don't know about that.
You want to coach again?
No, but you just look at it and be like, how does a guy get that type of time and space in that exact moment of the game, 30 seconds left? And obviously, this is why these players are great. I mean, this is like, you know, they're shuffling the cards up top and they're trying to create that confusion. And they did a good job at it. So you got to give them credit, and that's why they're good. You know, that's why they're 7-0 and this is why they're Stanley Cup champs. And but you know, just from like the opposition perspective, just like, you know, could you have maybe been a little more aggressive or adjusted a little quicker? But that's the hockey though, right? This is why these guys do it. But they were in it till the last 30 seconds, as you said, and they'll respond and come back a little stronger next game.
Tomorrow night Minnesota at home.
Morgan Frost
scratch 4 straight. Maybe he gets back into the lineup.
I would think so after last night. Probably, yeah, you know, they're waiting for a loss there to maybe shuffle the deck a little.
Yeah,
bit.
I felt bad last week. Someone had said I think I may have even said this last week. Someone said he was not playing. Then we got to the game and he was in warmups. I was like, oh, cool, he's playing. And then obviously he didn't, and he hasn't played since. So hopefully he gets back in there and plays well. But I guess when you make a change in the lineup and then you go on a bit of a roll, which they did, it's kind of hard to change the lineup, right? Like,
yeah.
But hopefully he gets back in tomorrow.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think like he needs to be in the top two, right?
He has to.
It's just one of those things where, you know, he's got to be patient with the situation, and once he gets in, you know, making a case where you don't give the coach a reason to take you out, you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, he's not a guy like you can work him in from top to bottom. I think he's like very, you know, specific on where he needs to be in the lineup.
Yeah,
you know,
for
so
sure.
I think he'll he'll get a shot, and he's, you know, he's probably sitting there. He's obviously pissed off, and
yeah,
knows when the time comes, he's got to play and play.
Well, you want him to be. You hope he's pissed off.
Yeah,
he
better be,
like,
yeah.
As a player, and we know he is. So
yeah,
yeah. Hopefully, he gets back in there, gets her going. Love that kid. It's one of my favorite guys. But yeah. Couple surprises so far. I know we're six games in. I mean, I had Boston starting 6-0. I know you had Edmonton starting 6-0, which hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But Boston is a bit of a – I don't want to say surprise, but love their coach. Obviously, friend of ours, Jimmy Montgomery. But everyone, you know, with Patrice Bergeron obviously retiring.
Yeah.
It's a big hole to fill. And, again, it's six games, but – pretty good start.
Yeah, I mean, 6-0. I mean, it's not easy thing to do in any league. So yeah, a little surprising. Obviously, they got a nice core there still, but when you lose the head of the snake, if you will,
yeah,
you'd think that you might lose a step or two. But got guys stepping up. Obviously, great coaching, carrying over what they had created last year into this year, and yeah, I mean, surprise. Yeah, but maybe not.
Right.
But yeah, 6-0 is not an easy thing to do. Vegas, not surprised. Edmonton, as you were talking about, like, I expected more.
Yeah.
Certainly, but I think that's going to be
something's off. I can't act like I've watched every game, you know, from start to finish, but from what I've seen and what I've, you know, read and hear, it's been a little ugly. I know they gave up 5 last night, I think, mm-hmm. in the third to lose a game they were winning. But you know, it's early.
Yep.
It's early. Detroit's one other team I just wanted to mention real quick. They've been kind of fun to watch. Watch a couple of their games. Ghost Baller says he's up for the Norris.
Yeah.
He's calling that.
9 points in 7 games, I think he's got. And
yep.
Larkin and
DeBrincat. Yeah, DeCat. It's like you, Debo, just snipe. That's all you do.
Just like Bo Horvat.
Just like Bo Horvat. That's the most he's said in a month. Just like Bo Horvat. Yeah, you're right. Vancouver, your boys. Not bad for him, too.
Pretty good.
Nice little start. Pretty good. But, hey, Mike McKenna.
Yeah.
This week. Played a long time for a lot of teams. Lucky enough to have him here. Great person, great family guy. Did a great job in TV too in Vegas there.
Yeah, there I thought so year. Too. He was very thorough, good speaker.
Yeah, he
knows
is.
His shit.
Smart guy. And he was with our boy Frank Cervelli for a while here. But moving on to other things, but we'll get into that when we talk to him.
Yeah, I think we're ready to rock here, Nass.
Let's do it.
131. Here
Devil's,
we go.
Devil's Day. Let's go. Before we get to our interview, Riggs, I got a question for you.
What do you got, Nass?
Do you feel the chill in the air?
Do I?
I'm just asking because, as we know, the NHL is back, and it's time to hit the ice. And I'm talking about with DraftKings Sportsbook, getting new customers ready for puck drop with an epic offer.
Whew.
And this goes to you as well. Score $200 instantly in bonus bets when you bet just $5 on hockey. Now, that's worth a sally.
Oh.
And we know how you sallied when you scored. You didn't. But I will sally heavy.
Yes.
Thursday night, our Philadelphia Flyers are taking on the Minnesota Wild, and they are +110 in that game. Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use code Knuckles. New customers can get $200 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey rigs. That's code Knuckles, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK. That's HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, licensed partner, Golden Nugget Lake Charles, 21 plus, varies by jurisdiction, void in ONT. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/hockeyterms for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsibility gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyrights of the NHL 2023, all rights reserved.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are happy to have a good friend, personally, a good friend of the show, former sixth-round pick of the Nashville Predators in 2002. Right-handed catch always throws me off with you guys, Mike, but please welcome Mike McKenna. He's not afraid of snakes, Riggs. I can tell you that, baby. What's up, brother?
Thanks, Nasty. Thanks, Riley. Yeah, I'm not afraid. I did gain a nickname, Rattlesnake, over the years. I'm sure we'll get to it. But man, it's great to be talking to you guys. I wish I was in person. I got to get back to Philly sometime soon. I may not have been there long, but I loved it and kind of have roots there. I used to train in Philly every summer. A lot of people didn't know that about me, so I do feel really connected to that area.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming on. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, man, looking good, brother.
Yeah, looking good. In your office, in your studio there.
I love that.
So when we moved into this house, I looked around and I'm like, well, we've got a walk-in closet in our guest room. And I thought, and this was kind of before COVID and before everybody was using Zoom for everything. And the more we got into it, I was like, man, I'm going to be recording stuff. I'm doing media. And I don't want my house to be a shrine to myself. So this is perfect. I'm going to put all my masks in the room and my jerseys and some memorabilia. And it works out pretty good because then I can just, like, at a party or something, just shuffle, like, five people up here.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Good strategy.
Well, I mean, you know, Mike, like, over the years, like, you obviously like to stay in one place. There wasn't a whole lot of teams.
No.
So you got to – I'm kidding, of course. So yeah, the jersey collection of yours has got to be unbelievable. We can get into that. But it's so cool, man. It's so cool. And great to see you, brother.
It's fun. You too. And it is fun to have these. And it's – I mean, it's kind of crazy, though. Like, teams don't always give the players jerseys. A lot of these I've had to buy. I've had to trade for. There's actually a rule now in the new CBA that every player in the NHL gets a jersey. And – I think I complained loud enough on social about that for a couple of years because it was jokingly called the McKenna rule because think about this, guys. And Riley, you've been up and down too. Like I was like, if you don't finish the season with a team, you're not there at the end of the year to take a jersey home. Like some teams would do, but who does it matter most to get a jersey? Comes up in his first NHL game or somebody who even plays two or three. Like for me, these jerseys mean everything to me because I had to work my ass off for them to even get a chance to open the gate for three games, you know?
Right.
And not to take anything away from the big dogs, but I'm happy that's changed. And yeah, I do have most of mine. I have all my masks, couple sets of gear. I try not to keep too much of the gear because it takes up so much space, but some sets that are special to me and to my family. And it's pretty fun, man. Like you look at the journey here. I thought it'd be great to have some longevity in one city, and that never happened. I just kept moving around. I got like who every, would have been, you know,
everybody I wanted you. Everyone wanted you, bro. That's what happens.
All the bad teams, you know. I don't think I was on an NHL roster that made the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, so like I played just under three dozen games, but I played for seven teams and I dressed games for two more. So I dressed NHL games for nine teams, which is the NHL record.
It is
me.
Hey?
It's
me. Yeah. You have
Sean Burke and Ron Tugnutt. Now those guys have played like 2000 NHL games and I got 35. Yet we all dressed for nine teams and I know both of them pretty well. So it's a cool club to be in.
Yeah, that is. Cool, yeah. Man. That's impressive.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I was just thinking as you said that you didn't keep all your sets of pads. Jesus, could you imagine if you did? How cool would that be though? I know it's take up so much space, but just to see even the evolution of the pads, right? Like how they changed so much over the years.
Absolutely,
I've been in the game way too long because I'm old. But just the changing of all the pads and stuff, and you know, you were there a long time.
Sure. Well, and I do have that in my basement. You know, I have the first set of pads that was ever purchased for me, St. Lawrence University. Bauer Reactor 5 pads, and they're gorgeous. They're scarlet, brown, white. And I kept those for a purpose. You know, that was a special set to me. It was also my favorite colorway ever. And I even did a retro set with the stars and was doing one with Philly that it didn't show up in time. I didn't get to wear it in time. And now it's my regular set now is a retro Reactor 5 Bauer set. So you see all these goalies doing retro gear out?
Yeah.
2017-18 with Dallas Stars.
I did it. I was
the first one to run it for a full season. Now I took my idea from, I think Freddie Anderson ran it in the Heritage or Winter Classic for the Leafs the year before. But when they started to do digiprint technology, I did it. So I have that set. I've got my first NHL set, which was a Bauer 195, Nike Bauer 195 set with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I've got the set I finished my career in and just a couple more. But they are on a wall in my basement.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Like in retrospect, I kind of wish I'd kept them all because now I could have like displayed them at the practice facility for the youth hockey team I played with are now at. And there are a couple sets for people in Philly at Hockey Heaven over in Hatfield.
I've seen them.
Chris Economo. He's got a couple in there as well, including that Bauer set from 2017-18 with the Dallas Stars. So there's remnants of my career spread all throughout North America.
Yeah, it's funny, Riles. I took we all know Econ and it was funny because I took Elvis over. I've got a customer who kind of was telling me about him. I'm like, oh, I know him, and he had reached out to you and said, you know, maybe bring Elvis over.
Yep.
This is 2 years ago. Elvis was just getting into it, but it's a great setup. He's got this little ice area right upstairs. So I'm like sitting there. He goes, oh, come in here. Walk in there. This bar setup. I'm like, dude. And then I look over and I see this guy and I went, yo. And he's like, oh yeah, he's my guy. I'm like, so I think I sent you a picture immediately while I was there. And so we're going back and forth, and he had some pictures up, the rattlesnake there and some of his pads. And what a setup that is, man. He's got this full upstairs, like house basically. Yeah. I mean, it's like
he's killing it.
Really,
eh?
Really cool, man.
Doing a good job.
Yeah. One of my really good customers, William Wright, his son goes there, Aiden Wright. And he's playing now at PHC over here in the same organization with Elvis. But I just can't get that out. I can't go that far. I got so much other stuff going on, but to drive that far. But he's probably worth it, obviously. But it's just too much for me to do.
That's
but
a haul from Voorhees, man. That's a long way across town. I've been there. I've seen the Philly traffic. I get it. It was. Yeah. It's not easy to cross, man. St. Louis is a little different animal when it comes to traffic. You can usually avoid it here. It's not one of the old Eastern cities, you know, but we still got it a bit. It's not too bad.
Yeah. Are you you are obviously in St. Louis. Are you getting out to any of the games? Like, I know that season just started, but do you try to get to the games?
You know, when I was working in media, I'd go occasionally. You know, as a fan, like, frankly, it's so expensive. Like, a family of four, you're going to drop, like, that's a $300-$400 night before you know it. So, you know, as a fan, I don't go to many games. Occasionally, though, I'm lucky because I grew up as a kid in St. Louis with my dad and grandpa both being off-ice officials for the NHL.
Oh, okay.
And the way I used to work in the 80s was the home team just gave their officials a couple tickets, right? Season tickets.
Yeah.
And it long ago became a paid position by the NHL. But the Blues still swing the off-ice guys' tickets occasionally. So sometimes when we plan it out in advance, we'll go. We usually pick one or two nights with the youth hockey team, but I watch every Blues game. They've been the team that I clue in on. Up until this year, I've watched every Golden Knights game because I did broadcast work with them and some freelance media work. But I've definitely got favorites, you know, like Louis is on, I watch St. Louis. If Dallas is on, I still have a soft spot there. Philly, you know, the teams that I played with towards the end of my career, I still feel connected to. And I'm more likely to watch that team than I would another that I never played for.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. It's a good area to live in, obviously. Braden Shen loves it there, by the way. Like,
well, he's captain, man. So
yeah.
The dream pony, man. No, he's loved here too.
Yeah, when he was traded there that year, we met up and had dinner when we were in town, and he was just like, "Nah, I love this place, man." He really does. Chief does too. Chief does too. And Hollywood Hayes, my boy, he seems to be loving it out there. He's really happy. So hopefully they can get her going. It's early though.
It's early.
It's early.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of St. Louis kind of gets a bad rap. It's kind of like Camden. Like, you know, like when you see, like when you see crime statistics, dude, it's like St. Louis, Camden, Detroit. And what they don't tell you is that the city of St. Louis only has like 280,000 residents in it, and the metro area is about 2.8 million. So, like, you know, it's skewed, dude. This is a great place to raise a family. I mean, I've seen that in Philly too. Like, you're not going to Camden if you can avoid it, right? So, Shen sees why it's a good place. A lot of people stay here.
Yeah. They got a pretty solid alumni there floating around still, hey?
Yeah, see those really guys? Good. That's a big reason why the youth hockey in St. Louis has become so good, because we've had players like, I mean, the early ones were John Wensink, who was really involved. You know, you had Larry Patey, like other guys from the old guard. But then it turned into Basil McRae and Keith Tkachuk and Jeff Brown and Al McInnes. And they're all invested. You know, they really put the time and effort in. So it went from my grandpa and a dozen guys starting hockey in St. Louis in the 50s to now 50-something high school teams, two dozen NHL players from St. Louis. Like, it's looked upon as a place where this is a good place to find a hockey prospect, is St. Louis. Like, if I wish my grandpa were still alive to see it. He wouldn't believe how much that transition is taking place.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's nice to see.
It is.
Yeah, and how they're keeping it alive, too. You know, I've been in contact. We've had Cam Jansen on, and, you know, he's talking about all the alumni stuff that's going on there and how involved
he is. He's stable.
Yeah,
he's grounded. I love that guy.
Hey, Cam is, I tell you what, Cam and I go back a long way. He's younger than I am, so we never played together in St. Louis. But what he's managed to carve out is amazing. Like, his work ethic is there. It's always been tough as nails, obviously. But, dude, I can remember times when we'd go out in St. Louis, you know, when we were in our 20s, and I'd just lose him by, like, 10:30 or 11. And I know, like, Cam's off doing something, right? You know, after a couple times out, I was just like, I can't keep up with him. Yeah. Like, it's literally not that I don't – I love the guy. I can't go out because I lose him, and I just can't go that hard. I can't do it. He's gone again. And so, yeah, but he's fine. I mean, right, man, you know how tough he was going to Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Just a bulldog on the ice, man. And he's been a good friend over the years. He was he was the first player from St. Louis to ever play in the NHL, like born and raised from here.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, he paved the way for all of us.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Awesome. Yeah. He did a hell of a job, and, continues to do well with his personality, obviously carrying the weight. And I mean, he's got the work ethic. So everything he does is
I remember, I'm sorry, Riles, let me interrupt you. I remember him being in Albany, you know, when I was with the Phantoms there, and he was, you know, I guess, you know, just turning pro.
Steaming out of the forehead.
Dude, I mean, this guy just was looking to, he just wanted something.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to run someone through the wall. He wanted to fight. He didn't give a shit. Well, he didn't really talk shit. He just was like, ran around, and I just remember, God, man, I'd love to see this guy here. Like, he's an animal, but anyway, good dude. Makes me laugh, that guy.
Yeah. You've been, you know, outside of St. Louis, I know you're not in the media like you were before. You still following the NHL as closely, or is that kind of slowed down?
Yeah, it's weird for me because I spent the last 4 years completely in media, and the first two being with the Vegas Golden Knights, just entirely focused on that team with the league outside of it. And then the last 2 years, I was doing work amongst the whole league as an NHL analyst at Daily Faceoff. And I really realized how hard it is to keep up with the whole league at once. Like, you can spend every waking minute of your life analyzing and doing, you know, work on Sirius XM when you're on, and you got Steve Koulias as your partner who watches every game and pushes you to be your best, which I love. Like, I love that challenge. It was a lot, but what I find now is I think I'm actually getting more enjoyment now of just kind of focusing on one team.
Right.
You know, if I can just watch the Blues, now I really feel like I know those players inside and out. I can disassociate a little bit. Like, if I want to go home and watch wrestling some night, I can do that. And then I'll talk to Bruce Boudreau about it the next day.
Yeah.
We'll go back and forth and we'll decide who we like in the cage match, you know. But I've actually found it's a little bit freeing, and I still keep my pulse on the league. Dude, I can't get away from the NHL app and the highlights and clips, but it's not to that same all-encompassing level as it was before. And I think it's probably, in the long run, might be good for me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's time consuming. That's for
it's
sure.
a lot.
Riggs is calling me. NHL Frenzy last night. You had your pick of every single team, right? He goes, right. Did you know there's 32 teams in the league now?
Come on.
No, he didn't. But he's watching every game. He's watching the puck drop from every game. This guy's fired up. I thought I was a hockey nerd. No, I'm kidding.
I don't get to watch a ton of hockey. Yeah.
Well, shout out to the NHL on being job creators, though, man. Because we've got 32 in the National. We've got another 32 in the American League. Mm-hmm. The ECHL's got I'm not sure how many. They're well over 20. Like, the pro hockey landscape is larger than it's ever been, with people making a good living doing it, which is awesome. Like, you don't see that in minor league baseball. They're not even unionized. They're eating hot dogs and hamburgers and living 8 wide in an apartment. And that's one thing that, for myself, as being somebody who spent most of his career at the American League level, man, I made a good living doing it. I'm really thankful for the people before us that paved the way for us to have, you know, living conditions that you can not only make a living, but actually, you know, save a bit of money, so when you're done, you can decide to do something afterwards if you decide to.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
For sure, man.
I mean, when along your career, I'm assuming it was somewhat early, did you recognize, like, this might be the path for me, like this journeyman role and it being accepting of it? I mean, you have a great attitude, obviously a big part of it. When did you kind of make that realization?
It's a great question, because for me, I never expected to make it to the NHL. Like, everything happened for me quickly, organically. I didn't have expectations. Yeah, I was drafted. I went to school on a 3-for-4 scholarship, like on time, you know, like, so the progression was there, but I was never unrealistic to knowing how hard it was. And I didn't sign with Nashville after college. They signed some guy named Pekka Rene. I mean,
what?
Why would they sign him?
It seemed to work out okay.
they had the rattlesnake in the house,
know.
And they don't say what?
I know,
they took,
but you
they
know
took
what
it was, the rhino.
Yeah. But remember how weird things were coming out of the 2005 lockout, guys.
Yeah.
Like, they had about 2 weeks to sign everybody, and teams were real thin. Like, they didn't have budget at all, so they ran 4 goalies. They didn't even have a 5th goalie. Like, in today's world, I truly believe in today's world, I would have signed with Nashville. They'd put me on the coast, minimum entry level deal as a 5th goalie or something, right? So it's just a little bit different. But it wasn't until, like, I made my debut at Tampa 2008-09. And again, it happened real fast. I wasn't even on an NHL contract until 2 days before I signed.
Oh.
Or 2 days before I made my NHL debut.
Yeah.
So I get there, I play games, and then it was just kind of a constant battle to even – you know, make it back to the NHL. And so I would say probably by my 4th or 5th year, by the time I got to the Devils organization, I'm still fighting to try to have a prospect role to maybe grab onto an NHL job. But there was a real turning point for me, and that was in 2014-15. And by this point, I mean, I've played 9 years of pro, right? I'm deep into my career. It was with the Coyotes organization, and I was already comfortable as being a mentor and a number 3 goalie. Okay. I got it. That's my role. But I remember this being like my last chance and going, this is it. I'm forever destined to be a number 3. And I was leading the American League in everything. Like, my save percentage, like, I mean, this is January and it's like a 940. It was stupid.
Wow.
It was like the year Linus Ullmark had last year for the Bruins.
Okay.
And the Coyotes traded Devan Dubnyk because he was outplaying Mike Smith and he had value. They traded him to Minnesota, and I'm going, this is it. Like, I'm 31, I think, at the time. I would have been 31. And I'm like, I still have a chance. This could be it. And they called up a goalie who was coming off injury and had been in the coast.
Oh.
Played 3 games and he was in the coast. So they got a warm body on a call up for a week. And then they called me up for about 5 days, and then they flipped me out for Louis Domingue, and Domingue had played 8 games in the American League, 3 in the coast that year, and the delta between our numbers was ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
And that's when I went, nope, it's over for me. I am a number 3 the rest of my career. No matter what I do, I'm not going to ever fill that void for a team unless something insane happens. And that's just, that was the turning point where I really kind of became resigned to it, which I hate saying that because I still was pushing. Like I still, my last season, I played the most I ever did in the NHL. And I had my best hockey as a 34 and 35 year old in the American League playoffs and Calder Cup playoffs. But that was the turning point. So I was never totally, I always pushed, but I knew by year 7, 8, 9 that was the way I was headed. And you just be a good teammate, man. You don't get the call up. What can you do? Right? You just play the game.
A crazy schedule can make it easy to fall back into your dinnertime recipe rut. Keep mealtime exciting with over 40 recipes to choose from every week. So there's always something delicious to discover with HelloFresh. With so many in-season ingredients, you'll taste all the freshness of fall in every bite of HelloFresh's chef-crafted recipes. Produce travels from the farm to your door for peak ripeness you can taste. Nast, you've recently tried some of these recipes.
Yes, I have.
What are your thoughts?
Unbelievable. Seriously, easy to make. You just follow directions, which I need.
Yeah.
A lot of direction. Honestly, food's unbelievable. So fresh. I guess that's why it's called Hello Fresh.
Oh.
But so good. I fed the kids. My billet sons loved it. I acted like I'm like this really good cook.
Beautiful.
I'm not, but I'll tell you what, it's so good. And you know how important eating right is. I have two young hockey players here, so it's awesome. So good.
America's number one meal kit. Go to HelloFresh.com/50knuckles and use code 50knuckles for 50% off plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/50knuckles, code 50knuckles for 50% off and free shipping.
You're a good teammate for sure. I mean, I remember the day we met. I'm like, this guy's a good fucking guy, man. Like, and he had a great attitude. It was like you, I honestly, not just saying this because you're here with us today, but it was just like he had been there all year.
Yeah.
Like he fit right in. Let's go, boys. You know, it was awesome. I remember sitting on the bench with you talking and like, I felt like I knew this guy. I mean, now I had seen you a lot. I had seen you, but I didn't know you. And it was cool. You actually, when you did come to the Flyers, what a couple days you had. Were you on three teams in like 2 days? It was something insane.
It was three teams in 2.5 days. And this is all funny because in Montreal, in the span of a month, I backed up and played a game for three different teams. I played for Ottawa. I backed up for Ottawa. I backed up for Vancouver. I backed up for Philly in Montreal all within a month. And the security guard that sits by the backup goalie.
Who you're talking about. I know exactly the man you're talking about.
He was so fucked up every time I walked in. I don't mean drunk. I mean, like, by seeing me, he couldn't figure out, like, what's happening here? Like,
who should have told him, oh, it's my brother.
Yeah.
It's my brother. So, yeah, I went from Ottawa. I took morning skate with Ottawa January 2nd. My family had just moved into the hotel so we could be together after being apart for 2 months. I got traded morning skate to the Vancouver Canucks, dressed for the Canucks that night. We flew to Montreal. I backed up in Montreal. Then we flew to Toronto, and I was on waivers. And I was claimed for off waivers by the Flyers. There was also a claim by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I was a hot commodity for a second.
That's what I said. Everybody wanted you, bro.
Yeah, I was a real fucking hot commodity there, man. So I get claimed by the Flyers. So that's when I meet with you guys. Like,
yeah,
I went from Ottawa to Vancouver to Philly in 3 days. So two and a half days, three teams. And to be honest with you, like what I was doing on the bench and at the rink was my release. It was still my happy place. That was like the darkest time of my life. Like, and I'm in the NHL and you probably didn't see that at the time. No. But if you talk to Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff, he'll tell you when we first met, he's like, hey, I love following your story. It's been great. And I remember, and he'll tell you, he's like, you looked at me and you go, I'm glad somebody's enjoying it, you know, because
yeah,
I'd been away from my family for 2 months. And I went into that season thinking it was going to be my last. And all I wanted was some stability and a good scenario. And I still had another 2 months after that of just being up and down. And I'm trying to play in the NHL. Like I'm trying to compete, right? Like
right.
My game with the Flyers, I suck, man. I watched a video the other day. I was horrible. And I,
wow, let's not get carried away, man. You get thrown into the fire in Washington.
Yeah, right.
I think we were back-to-back. No, were we back-to-back?
Oh, you look at my career, I think two-thirds of my games were in back-to-back scenarios, and I played about seven of them against the Caps. So, yeah. I mean, I'm the guy Ovi did the hot stick on. Like, that's all known
for. Oh, no. Oh, baller, you better find it.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't know that. Jesus.
You did it? I mean, that's when people find out, they're like, oh, my God, that's you? yep, that is. I got a picture of it over my shoulder.
You know what? I got Elvis is going to love that little tidbit because he's always, he's always doing that. That's not cool, Ovi. I don't like anything that happened to you, except for what a great picture. You're the guy.
Oh, I'll tell you what. The coolest part of it is I do have a picture over my shoulder, and it's autographed by Ovi, and it's a picture of him doing the hot stick.
You got to have it.
I won't say what's written on it. It's a personalized message, but a dear friend of mine and somebody who coached Ovi had him sign it and send it. And it's one of my favorite possessions.
Awesome.
It's a moment in the NHL that's iconic that I was a part of that at the time I was pissed. I was so mad. Ovi and I actually talked about it the next time we saw each other. Everything was fine. And now it's a cool moment, man. I don't have much to hang my hat on in the NHL, but that's something that you'll see me in clips on after I'm
forever,
gone, you know?
Forever. Yeah. You know, it's funny thinking about that. I know you're, you know, obviously you cared, like you're probably pissed off. Can you imagine seeing the rattlesnake behind him coming with his stick?
Yeah. Right.
When he's doing it, that would have been great. But going back to you, when you came, so I was telling Riles a little bit, you came with the Ottawa pads, like the Bauer. So I put so much, I took them home. I brought them here. I was up all night because I'm like, this gold just not going to work. And other stuff.
In the red.
Yeah, in the red. So I covered it the best I could. I had all this pad wrap. His pads probably weigh 20 pounds each. Because I think I taped your mask too. And you're like, dude, it's too heavy. Because I put tape, cloth tape on it.
Yep.
But, man.
That was really cool what you did, though. Like, I was so appreciative that you took care for me to look the part. Like, it sucks to go out there looking like a kaleidoscope. When I got dealt between Ottawa and Vancouver, you've got Anders Nilsson for Ottawa wearing Vancouver gear, and I'm vice versa. And, like, you just look like an idiot. Like, you don't feel good about yourself. And you know, for you to do that and take the time, really, it meant a lot to me. But it was also like, man, Nasty's a kindred spirit. Like, I'm such a gear nerd, like massive, massive gear nerd. Player sticks, forwards, goalies, everything. I had every hockey catalog you can imagine from USA Hockey as a kid, right? All of them. I love the equipment. But I had never used pad wrap before. So I didn't know. I mean, yes, the pads were heavier because of it. But this was the thing I didn't realize. They didn't slide as well. And I had never thought about that. Yeah. I never took that into account. And now you're seeing goalie pads on the inside of the legs. They're trying to find, for lack of a better term, slipperier material. Yeah. They're trying to make the pads slide as best they can. So, I mean, it was kind of a lesson in equipment in some ways, but I was so thankful though. Like, I looked like kind of like an orange road cone, but the mask looks so sinister, like flat black.
Yeah, it was flat.
And then, dude, I got... And then when my mask finally showed up, it was flat black, done by Ray Bishop, Warwick. And this is honestly, this is probably my favorite mask. Like, there's just something so dirty and nasty about this thing. And then having
gritty
on the back and having him sign it. My best friend always drew the back plate for me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, dude, there's a lot of layers to what I did with equipment in my career that just, there's a lot of meaning behind it. I felt like, and that's why the career to me was, it meant a lot, you know, more than just a couple games in the NHL.
Yeah,
for sure. I remember another thing. I think I was telling you, Riggs. It was so funny. We were in Washington. You're getting ready to play. It was the game you're playing. Get thrown into the fucking guys. We play back to back. Rattlesnake, you're in. Don't worry about Ovi on that. You know, that other side there. Probably take about 10 of them fucking by your ears, you know. But you came walking by. I remember standing in the hallway, and I don't know what brought up the discussion. I think we were talking about music, and you're like, oh, big heavy metal guy. Next thing you know, I'm like, oh, my buddy Phil Demmel who's a really good friend of Ryle's too, and you're like, he's like my favorite guitarist. I'm like, wow, are you messing around? I thought he was kidding with me. He's like, I'm serious. I'm like, hey, hang on a second. So I messaged Phil and I'm like, you got a minute to like FaceTime me real quick? I explained the situation. So he FaceTimed
us. Oh, so cool.
It was wicked, man. Like I'm a massive, massive metal fan. And like, I have like, so Phil Demmel, you guys know Phil, but Phil started out in the Bay Area thrash scene with a band called Violence. That was his band. That's been reignited. It's been reanimated in the last couple of years, but like, I have a vinyl album of from Violence, right? Like,
wow.
And then he went on to do Machine Head, which some of the
that's
stuff
where we met him.
Loved. Yeah. And he's a, you know, I played lead guitar in that, and he's done other things. And I just, he's legitimately like one of my, had been one of my favorite guitar players. And you know this guy, you know, like, yeah, it was mind blowing to me, that connection. But then finding out that he was a Philly fan, and and I've had this happen too. Like, I've become friends with musicians, with indie car drivers, with basically anybody with social media that finds out you have similar interests,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and you're kind of in a special club, right? If you're a professional musician, if you're a professional athlete, like, you go through things that people otherwise don't, and you align real quick. You know, that's why we become friends with rock stars. Why they become friends with athletes? Well, shit, man, we've both been living on buses for years. You know, and
for sure.
Man, that was just such a cool introduction, because like, it was kind of a pinch me moment, right? You know, and.
I guess to him,
it's kind of the same way. Like, here's a guy in the NHL, but for me, I'm like, no, man, like, you're way more talented than I am. You know, I can't go up and down a fretboard like you, dude. Oh, I can't hardly even play the guitar.
He always, when he comes to Philly, he always will throw first song, he'll throw Riley's jersey on. I think it's cool. I've obviously, awesome. Every time he's around, we've tried to see him, but just a good man, really good man. Cool dude. It was funny, we met him, but it was a bunch of us. It was me and you and Chemo Teeming and Richie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Was with us.
Yep.
Metallica, they were opening for Metallica. And I remember Zach Hill, I think we were probably in the locker room having a few cocktails. So we missed Machine Head. Like, we just didn't know, you know. So we're there, our buddy Jeff Gordon, who's the president of Live Nation. And so we go up to the suite. And Zach Hill comes running in, the legendary PR guy with the Flyers, and he's like, hey, the opening acts, like, one of their guys is a huge Flyers fan. You guys mind coming down and meeting them, you know, seeing the band? So remember we walking in that little room? We got great pictures. I'll find the picture, baller, but it's great pictures of all of us. And so I didn't even hear their music. So fast forward into the summer, he messaged me. He's like, hey, bro, we're playing, I think it was Ozfest, or it was something. And I'm like, oh, I'm there, bro. Can't wait. Well, I didn't realize it was heavy, heavy metal. Like, so I'm like, I got a date with me. And I'm like, yes, you know, it's gonna be cool, like whatever. And they start, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And I mean, he is.
It's heavy.
I mean, I'm like, what is going on? Like, blew my mind, man. I'd never been to a, like, I mean, if you want to call Metallica heavy metal, I call Machine Head.
Like death metal,
like heavy metal. Man. Yeah, that was like heavy, but it was so good. And he was he's such a good guy, man. So
yeah, he
stayed
really
in contact for years. Talked to him all the time. Text with him. He's gonna love this that we were bringing him up.
Oh yeah,
he's a good man.
To tag him in the
I just
post.
Thought it was so cool that like he was like, oh my god, I thought he was messing with me. Like I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like, I love him, man.
Yeah,
I'm like
yeah.
We're calling him right now.
Well, I think it's I mean, yeah, they're heavy for sure. But I think it's funny to me how like a band like Metallica that came up from that same thrash scene that what Phil did, Metallica's massive. And if you listen to those first couple Metallica albums, dude, they're straight up thrash.
They're heavy. Yeah.
Like, and Justice for All, Ride the Lightning, Master Puppets. Like, these aren't radio albums yet. People that listen to Taylor Swift love Metallica. Yet, yeah. I can't get somebody to listen to Testament or Slayer from that same time frame that sounds so incredibly similar. I just it's almost kind of an exercise in branding, right? Where it's once you get that name and you're the big band, you can do what you want. But dude, it's I could see that being a real awakening when you open up and
it was awesome though. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I've never had like really watched it before, like seen anything that hard. But
yeah,
I just thought it was cool because Chemo Teeminen knew who Machine
Head was. Is a huge metal guy.
Yeah,
well, yeah. He knew who they were. Guys, he was the love death metal.
Knew, right? Like, but we went down there, met the guys. They were great. And Phil's like, "I'll come up and watch you guys. So then we ended up going out.
Yeah.
Remember, we went over to an establishment in PA.
I remember.
I won't say the name, but we went to an establishment and they actually had, they're like, hey, don't forget buses at 2. So he's like, I just got to be back by 2. We're like, oh, yeah, that might work.
Yeah.
This is when Ryan was making me stop at Burger King at 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah, it happened.
To keep his weight up. But they ended up sending a driver to pick him up because we were past our time limit.
I remember that.
Anyway.
You had to keep your weight up. I had to keep my weight down.
I probably should have kept it down. I was obsessed with
fighting 265 pound men.
Poor coaching on myself.
Changed now.
Yeah. Nasty's encouraging me to stop through BK, you know, 2:30 in the morning for a double of Whopper with cheese.
Not a chance. No, he had to eat a lot.
Yeah, I did.
Keep his weight up. Probably now he's a lean 155.
Not quite that lean. Not quite that lean. But
I'm the same way.
Are you?
Yeah. I don't eat as much now. Like, legitimately, I don't usually eat lunch. Like, I've just reduced my caloric intake enough to kind of maintain because I just like food too much. And that was my problem. Like, a pregame spread, man.
Oh yeah.
Crushed. It's so good. And then if you're a backup goalie, you don't play. And then there's pizza in the room afterwards. And I'm such a slut for pizza that I can't help myself. Like, if it's out, I can't help myself. I have to eat it. So that was hard for me, was to try to kind of stay where I wanted to. I was never lower than I wanted to be, ever. Right. I was always trying to keep it down.
It's funny you bring up the pizza being in the room, because it's the last thing I needed to be doing, but I can't help it. I love pizza too, but it was a funny thing that happened a few years ago when I was still the team, and Hexie just did not like that idea of the pizza in the room, you know? And, you know, like, I would bust his balls. I'd be like, well, it seems to work for the Pittsburgh Penguins back-to-back cup. Yeah. Pizza doesn't seem to be bothering them.
It's
too.
Protein pizza.
And he would just buy. He would say, come on, Deke, it's not good for you. It's bad. You know, like, and I'm just like, I know, whatever. So we're on the road, and Hexie did not make the trip. And the boys were like, hey, if we win, he would let them get wings in Buffalo.
Wingies.
Yeah, Tommy like wingy. He would let him get wings, but only if they won. And I just remember, and no disrespect to Hexie, because that was his rule. So that's just what you did. Well, we lost one day, and we had ordered all the wings. And he says, Deke, get rid of them. So I'm like, I look over at Simmer. I walk in. I'm like, I got to get rid of them. He goes, you put them in that room right there. Yeah. Everyone's walking into my little skate sharpening room and they're coming out.
I got sauce all over.
But what I was going to say about the pizza was Hexie didn't make the trip, and we weren't allowed to get pizza. And maybe twice that year he allowed it. So they ordered wings and pizza no matter what. And Hexie wasn't there, and they weren't supposed to have the pizza, right? Well, someone's doing the post game, and it may have been Taryn Hatcher. I don't know if she was with us yet, but she's interviewing someone. Here comes someone cruising by.
Just mucking a slice.
And I'll never forget, Sal came in and he goes, Hexie just called Jimmy. He saw it live.
Not live.
What the fuck? Yeah. He's like, the boys ordered it. He goes, "What? I can't stop him." Like, you know like,
he was just furious.
But what are the chances? And it was the way it happened. Too.
Yeah.
You can't deny people that. When you're so used to it, you can't take it away. And guys, tell me some of the things you look forward to on the road. When you go into Philadelphia, you can't wait for a cheesesteak. When you go into Montreal, you can't wait for a Sheehan show.
Like, yeah.
You have these things. Like, now it's become a thing when teams come to St. Louis, they get barbecue. You're looking forward to these little moments of normalcy and sanity when you're not sucking down another goddamn protein shake and you can just live and have a slice of za. You know, like, you're just so excited to rip into that lukewarm piece that's been sitting there for 40 minutes.
Yeah. Never was delivered on time. Yeah. Right? It's either early. Too early. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And then Hexie gets gassed, and the boys are just ripping the pizza again. Boys are just like, listen, just double slices, you know what? Up here.
For me, it was probably better, so I wasn't eating pizza that late. But, like, you know, those are his rules, and that's the way it was. I mean, but it was just funny to me because.
Oh, that's class. We got to pull that clip.
So I'm fine.
Well, that, you know what? It reminds me of a very similar thing where we had a rule playing for the Binghamton Senators under Kurt Kleinendorf as our coach. I like Kurt a lot. I have no bad words to say about Kurt at all, but he had a lot of rules. Okay. And I didn't always agree. He came from the Lou Lamoriello school, so no facial hair was allowed. I hate that rule. I'm sorry, Lou, all the success in the world, everything, but that no facial hair rule is garbage. I can't stand it. So we had that rule. And we also at that time everybody had to wear their helmet in warmups. Now in the American League, this was 2011-12. You didn't have to wear a helmet in warmups back then. Okay. Right. You could still go without it. And the last game of the year, we were so far out of playoffs. It was a total mutiny. Everybody went out with their bucket off for warmups.
No.
Everyone. Like myself included, like we all just went, fuck it, we're doing it. And he walks in and he had a smile on his face and he just, you guys are assholes. It's probably the only time I ever heard him curse, you know?
Yeah.
But it just shows though, like there was real contempt for that rule. There was real contempt for not having pizza. If as stupid as that may seem, are you creating the best culture when you're denying humans things that they like to have the right to do? Right. Like if the whole league has to wear their helmet in warmups, whatever. But if you have the choice to from the league, but your team says no, or just a coach, you're kind of like, come on, like, you know, let us have that freedom. I feel that on a personal level.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. Riggs, you had no helmet.
No
you
helmet. Had the locks, yeah. I would have still went no bucket. Even no if it bucket. Was the rule, yeah.
I would want to do that. I know it must be cool, right?
Yeah. Do you feel vulnerable? I only ever took like two laps, no bucket, and warmups. Do you feel exposed?
Not at all. I felt liberated. Just flowing out there. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I would love, you guys did it. You guys both played in NHL. I would love to just come out and just take one lap, just no bucky, just the heavy crossover and then get off before I fell.
Get the tongues out, the Kobe lab look. Yeah.
Look, Kobe action. That would be the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah. The wind blowing off the face, yeah. Over the hair. Yeah.
The old stretch at the red line.
Oh, you got to.
Do the old stretchy.
Yeah. A ton of stretching.
Oh, man.
That's all I pretty much did out there. Hovered the red line, no bucket.
Couple hairy eyeballs. During the game.
Oh, during the game, yeah. But yeah, no, for sure. I agree with that. You know, there's a fine line there of creating discipline, structure, and boundaries, but then like just being unreasonable with some of those asks, you know, or just like you say, the facial hair. We're like, God, you got grown men here that are battling the trenches, like a little
you,
facial
for
hair.
You.
Like, yeah, for you. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, come on. Like, rules. Throw these guys a bone. Like,
that's
you know.
The Yankees rule, you know? Like,
yeah.
It was crazy. I remember showing up to Jersey and for training camp, and I actually asked Cam Jansen ahead of it because he'd been in the organization. He was Lou's boy, right? And he'd do whatever Lou asked. And say, is this real? Like, you got to shave, all these different things I'd heard. And he's like, oh, yeah, you better. And so I remember the first day of training camp, the night before, in the hotel room, I shaved. And like, I don't like to shave with a razor because I get bad razor burn. My neck bleeds, sensitive, you name it. Right. I don't like to do it. And I shaved the night before and I come in the next morning and the PR guy looks at me and he's like, you need to go shave. What? I'm like, he goes, did you shave this morning? I go, I did last night. He goes, you need to go shave again. Like I had to, and I don't grow facial hair that fast. Like it was a tiny amount of stubble at all. And of course,
I go in.
They've got those Bic one bladers.
Oh, so guess what? Yeah.
I'm hacking away. I'm literally I have blood running down my chin, like my neck, to go take this picture. And the Devils have you put on shoulder pads to put your jersey on. So I even had player shoulder pads on as a goalie for my picture with the Devils with a bleeding neck that I'm sure they photoshopped. I just, why? You know?
Yeah, that was exactly.
This is not worth it, but I don't know. It's the Devil. You know what though? I say all that about the Devils, but they did give me another chance to play in the NHL. And I think those eccentricities that Lou has, they're there. You can tolerate them, but ultimately when it came time, the Devils to reward me for my play, they did, they gave me a chance. So I'm forever thankful to that organization for it. I just, It wasn't the most fun years I ever had, though. I'll put it that way, just because it felt stifling.
Yeah.
A little too rigid.
I've heard a lot of those stories.
Yeah.
Kovalchuk showed up and he couldn't use Warrior sticks that were kind of like neon. He had to switch them to just plain black, red, and white, you know, to fit the team culture. And it's just little things like that that kind of gnaw on players over time, I think. And like we had one guy show up and he had long hair, Nathan Perkovich, and Lou's like, you need to cut that. And it was kind of like when Mr. Burns told Mattingly in The Simpsons to cut his sideburns. And Mattingly cut his sideburns basically all the way over. I thought I told you to cut those sideburns, Mattingly. You know, and it was this Perkovich guy shows up and he had shaved his head down like the wood.
No.
Like, and I'm telling you, his head was all lopsided. And we're like, dude, you didn't have to go that far. He's like, just making sure. He was that terrible. He's like, I'm just making sure.
He's like, oh, man.
All right, man. People are going to look at you when you walk into the grocery store, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I was shocked when Yoggs ended up going there after he left here. I'm like, this will be interesting to see because Yoggs, like, he always had a little scruff, but okay, shaved. I can't believe it, man.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
You
want to
get paid, you got to shave.
You can't even shave the day before.
Hall of Famer. The day of. 42 Ryan, years old.
Did you play with Yager?
No. No, he was after me.
I got to play with him in Florida, and it was brief. I only dressed a couple games, but training camps for a year and stuff. And that was a huge thrill for me. You know, when his best years, I was 7, 8, 9 years old when he was crushing with the Penguins and stopping pucks on people that you've watched play is insane sometimes. I had that same feeling against Sergei Fedorov. My first year, I stopped a breakaway from Sergei Fedorov. And I'm just going, what fucking world am I living in right now? This is insane. This is the guy with the white skates terrorizing goalies in the Nike videos, you know.
Jersey just flapping. He's
The hair, and the supermodels, and just... Yeah. You know, the Easton AC aluminum composite stick with the Christian blade, like all these things. But Yager, I played with in Florida, and I this was wild. We're in Winnipeg, and I'm sitting right next to Roberto Luongo, which was another huge thrill for me, by the way. Like, because like I was teammates with Brodeur, with Luongo. Like, these guys are Mount Rushmore for me, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there next to Lou. And I'm just backing up like normal. And we did not play well in the first period at all. Turk comes in, Gerard Glant kind of gives the boys the business. Yager walks across and Nasty, you've seen Yager like in between periods, he doesn't have his tarp on.
Right.
But he takes his hockey pants off. So he's got like garter belt and shin guards and stuff, hair all over the place. And he walks through the locker room and I don't think anything of it. And then he walks out, and you know how the hallway in Winnipeg, you kind of have to walk out of the locker room into a hallway, and you've got the Gatorade coolers right there, and Lou and I can see right down the hallway. And I look, and Yager is standing there, and he looks at the Gatorade cooler, and it's a nice big ice chest, it's full of Gatorades and water, and he dunks his head straight into this thing, full ice chest.
Come on.
And he goes straight back, does the hair flip, and goes, rah! And I look at Luongo, and he looks at me, and I go, does he do that regularly? He goes, I've never seen it in my life.
I was gonna say I don't ever think I saw him do that. That's crazy.
So here is an absolute legend, like probably a top five player, like. Of all time, right? You know, Jaromir Jagr, he ended up going second overall in NHL scoring while we were there. They stopped the game for him, and he's dunking his head in a Gatorade cooler full of ice water and just roaring as he comes up, water everywhere. And just and then he just walked and sat down like nothing happened. Like, it was the most bizarre thing.
Yeah. Oh,
but
man,
never forget that. Especially Luongo. I've never seen it in my life.
Did the boys drink the water after?
No chance. That was
I doubt it.
Sweaty.
That.
Oh man. So you say you do still watch, you're still watching a bit of hockey though. Even though you're not, you kind of slide down to media a little bit here. Any early season surprises? I know it's very early, but for me, Ryan and I were talking about Boston, you know, you hear all this talk again. Well, they're going to have a tough time. Here we are. They're 6-0. I mean, yeah. For me, that's a pretty big surprise. I didn't see that
yeah,
coming.
I agree.
But just didn't know if you had
Fly Guys top of the list.
They're up there. They're doing better than I think people thought.
You know, the thing about Boston is that, like, first off, they haven't had a great or not a very difficult schedule to start, but I don't buy into that a lot. You know, like, you're seeing teams that are supposed to be at the bottom beating good teams. Like, you're seeing Anaheim be competitive, blah, 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 go down the list. I think what we failed to realize about Boston is that they still have a really damn good coach behind that bench, and they still have Marchand and Pasternak and a really solid decor and incredible goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised, yes, that they're 6-0, because filling that spot where Patrice Bergeron was to be a two-way center, to be the first over the boards in all situations, I didn't know how they were going to fill that. I like how Pavel Zacha has grown in his game. Charlie Coyle, to me, is an excellent third-line center. But this Matthew Patra kid is –
yeah,
he's taking it and run with it and looked really good, like he fits the part. So yeah. In some ways, I'm surprised by Boston just because they lost their heartbeat of the team. But in other ways, I'm not. Detroit's been really impressive. Like DeBlanket and Larkin, that duo, dude, I'm telling you, that's a real deal duo. That's not a joke. You look at the Leafs, Nylander and Tavares have been maybe the best players. So my question is, like, and I know the Flyers have been pretty good. When's the Metro going to get going? Like, yeah. I honestly think the Metro is not very good right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, Carolina's been poor to start.
Oh, man,
I know. Have been poor. New York, the Islanders are the Islanders to me. They're not a threat at all, but I'm surprised by how poor the Metro is.
Yeah. You know? Agreed.
And guys, are you surprised at all that Vegas and Colorado and even Dallas are doing what they're doing out in the West? I mean,
no.
I'm not.
No,
you know, so to me, it's really, I look at that Metro division going, who's going to catch fire and get moving here? Like, mm-hmm. Is it Carolina? Is it the Penguins? Like, one of those two teams is going to get going, but I don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't either. It's, I thought Pitt might come out a little stronger, but again, six games.
Yeah.
In. Yeah.
It's early.
Yeah. It's early, but, I was going to ask you about speaking of the West, the Edmonton start.
Oof.
That's tough. They gave up 5 1/3 last night. They were up 4-2, I think, and then up 7-4.
And let's be clear about this with Edmonton. It is not because Connor McDavid's out of the lineup. Right. This is a problem throughout the team that you want my honest opinion? I don't think that team's smart enough. Okay. Mm. And that's something I don't throw around loosely. They've played two different systems. They played man on man before. Now they're gonna play zone. Like, Jay Woodcroft's throwing every system he can at these guys in the last couple of years, and they just can't protect the middle of the ice no matter what they do. And to me, that's just a lack of hockey smarts. Like, you've got guys running all over the place that can't stay disciplined within system. Now, name system. Doesn't matter what system it is to me. Why were the Golden Knights the best team last year? Because they played Bruce Cassidy's system to a T with personnel who was veteran and able to do it. Guess what? Edmonton's got a veteran team. And they can't do it right now. It's not just on the D. It's on forwards. It's on depth. I love Jack Campbell, but that experiment, man, it doesn't look good. Like, he'll go missing. You know, I love that guy. I've always rooted for him. But you can expect 7-8 good games in a row, and then he falls off. And Skinner's pretty good. Like, they're just – until they can learn how to play defense and until Evander Kane – is in a contract year every single season, so he's motivated to play well.
Yeah.
When's that team going to get out of it?
Yeah.
And Dreisaitl.
Yeah, and we've had this question before, we've talked about it, but, like, Connor McDavid's not 22 anymore, and he's not old by any means, but how long do you want to stay there if you're him? Or, you know, that's a question I keep asking is, like, when are they going to get over the hump? Can they get over the hump? Maybe they're not smart enough. Maybe I don't know what happens, but, like, is he going to want to keep staying there and playing there? He's one of the best players, obviously, in the world, if he's not the best player in the world.
Yeah.
Blow it up.
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though. If you're going to make a move for that player, you're going to have to give up so much.
That's it. Yeah.
And then bring in a salary. Like, I actually think he's locked in Edmonton. I don't think you can move. Like, I know teams would. They would make it happen if you could, but I think the logistics of it and where he wants to be, it may just go on in perpetuity. I don't know.
Yeah.
I I get people that laugh at me when I said a couple of years ago that Cale Makar was the best player on the Avalanche. Now I think Cale Makar is the best player in the NHL. Oh, and I still get people coming back at me screaming about McDavid and everything. And I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. Goalies like D a lot. And what that guy does, there's no one like him on earth. And they've won a Stanley Cup. And they're crushing at Edmonton as a team. I'm sorry, man. They haven't done shit.
Yeah.
You're right. They haven't. That's what I mean. I mean, I just wonder if the frustration is going to build and build for this kid.
Would think so,
Yeah.
I mean, even Draisaitl, like, what a player.
You can only do so much as essentially those two guys.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how frustrating does it get?
They do fill the building, right?
I mean, yeah. You will always know that there's a very good chance that you're going to see something you'll never see again in your life when Connor's in the building. And make that two Connors now, because Connor Bedard's doing similar things with the Blackhawks. Yep. Not quite same level, but I mean, it's a thrill to watch the Oilers, but I'm sorry, that team just doesn't have it defensively. Like, they can't figure it out. And I think Woodcroft's been throwing spaghetti at the wall, doing the best he can, and they're just not grabbing onto the concept, or they don't want to grab onto the concept.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you chalk it up to they're just not good enough, right? I mean, because it's like, how many, like, at that level, guys, hockey IQ has got to be good enough to understand it. They just can't execute it, right? They just can't do it, right? I mean, knowing and doing are two separate things. But, I mean, I don't know many guys any guys really at the pro level that would just, like, wake up one morning and be like, it's not going to do it tonight, you know? You just can't. Like, you physically can't. Like, you just can't get the job done. And it's just really just the, you know, they need to retool and get some pieces in there that can actually – take action. But. I
mean, Riley, from a coaching perspective, you've done this before. Yeah. The hardest thing to teach is patience and awareness, which is really hockey IQ. Yeah. To me, like, you can teach skill all day long. NHL players will improve their skill.
Yeah.
But it's, and I see this with squirt hockey players. It's no different for squirts than NHL players. Some of them just get it. Yeah. You need a team of players that just get it.
Yeah, that's the truth. And the thing you're talking about, you know, I would say that is kind of like the essence of a potentially great player, right? It's like the guys that have that patience and that awareness. And then you mix in, you know, the work ethic and all the other stuff to mold the player. But like to me, like that, it's hard to teach that, right? Like, you can slow down the video and you could be like, be more patient here. But like, the reality is, if guy's got a monkey mind and pressure's coming, you know, it's like myself, I think of myself, it's like, no matter how much video John Stevens or Labby or whoever sat me down and be like, you gotta be more patient with the puck here, I'd be like, I'm just thinking in my head, I'm like 8 Sudafed deep, you know, like 5 coffees deep, like, it's the last thing I want to do is be patient with the puck, and it's like a hand grenade, it's like, let's get rid of this fucking thing.
Dude, you know? Who wants it? Who wants it?
It's so funny you mentioned Sudafeds, and like, I'm so happy that we're past that stage where everybody was throwing anything in their body. I remember in college, we had to run a mile and a half in 9 minutes and 30 seconds, or you couldn't be allowed in the locker room at St. Lawrence. That was a rule back then. And guys, I run like a wounded gorilla. Like, I got bow legs, flat feet, square toe box, short shins, scoliosis, like, I'm a murderer's row of why somebody can't run well, like, horrible. Like, you should see me play football trying to, like, I'm trying to catch a football, just like, my body's everywhere. And so I would train all summer. This is how stupid it was. I'd train all summer running instead of saving pucks like I should have been. Yeah. I'd spend the summer running to try to get across the line in 9 minutes and 30 seconds. And every summer I'd come in at about 9:36. And we had these other kids that could just smoke and drink all summer long and come flying across the line at 8:30, like, just gazelles, right?
Yeah.
And it was the most depressing thing in the world to me. And honest to God, it got to the point that, and nobody knew this at the time or anything, but I don't know how many Sudafed I took. I don't know how many ginseng pills I took. Like, it got to the point that in my mind, I was thinking, you know what? If I die doing this, they'll probably never have to do it again. And it's a win for everybody. Like, that's how warped our minds used to get.
Oh, I know. And
I look back at that. This was so stupid. And man, St. Lawrence changed my life. I loved my time there and everything. But that specifically was the dumbest thing I've ever been a part of, ever. what on earth did running a mile in 9:30 have to do with me getting in front of a hockey puck?
No
absolutely
shit, yeah.
Zero.
Nothing, yeah. Well, we went through our own version of that here in Philly for years, right? It was the 2-mile run, the 3-mile run. So, like, you would legitimately train for the fitness test, not to be a hockey player, just so you can get some street credit to start a camp. And guys would be belly up after the run, you know, the Asham running around barefoot because he just don't give two shits about the run, which is probably the right attitude. But, like, here I am just burying myself trying to complete this thing for no good reason. Like, it doesn't prove anything. Like, you're a good runner.
How big was the meal that we ate after preseason? Straight to the Italian. Like, I don't even eat Italian a lot. That was the biggest plate of pasta, meatballs, cannolis, you name it. The worst, most carb-filled meal I could ever have. I'd probably gain 5 pounds after testing that night every single season.
Oh, yeah. Smorgasbord. Yeah, don't miss those. Don't miss those days. That's for sure.
The running.
Now they got the Tortorella 8-lap or whatever it is. But at least that's functional to hockey. It's not. It's not running on a track. True. But we're evolving slowly. The hockey culture is evolving. Yeah. Some argue in what direction is evolving, but I think we're going in the right direction for the most part.
I agree.
For the most part. But could always get better, but it's certainly different than the Broad Street Bullies and lack of awareness around training and functional training and, you know, that whole bit, but
for sure.
You had an opportunity to play for a bunch of coaches. You know, we're talking about training and mindset and all this stuff. Like, you know, any coaches that jump out to you as being like guys that really helped you find your game or help you kind of make sense of your skill set and where you stood?
Big time. Yeah. You know, I think the greatest benefit I had to playing for so many teams was the exposure I had to so many goalie coaches and really good ones. I mean, I pretty much have the goalie Mount Rushmore goalie coaches that I've worked with. Mitch Korn, Ian Clark, Francois Allaire. I mean, if you did a goalie Mount Rushmore, you take those three and put Warren Strelo up there. Those are your four. And I got to work with all of them and pretty early in my career. Mitch Korn, when I was drafted by the Predators, he was their goalie coach then. And he's probably been the greatest mentor to my life, even though I wasn't signed by him, right? But I had development camps, did four of them together. I worked his camps in summers. So Mitch has been a guiding light for me. Chris Economo, who's in the Philly area, we talked about earlier.
Yep.
I mean, he was my rock every summer, dude. I'd go see him. From the goalie aspect, Ian Clark was really important for me too. Francois Allaire, go down the list. And I could rattle so many off, man. You know, like Kem Dillabaugh is fantastic in Philadelphia, right? He's in that group. Jeff Reese in Dallas, just.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at just coaches, not just the goalie guys, Glenn Gulletson was our coach in Las Vegas with the ECHL team, the Wranglers, 2005-07. Glenn's now an assistant with the Edmonton Oilers. He was ahead with Dallas. He was ahead with Calgary. I have my career, I think, because of Glenn, because of the system he put in place, because I cared about his players, because of how he believed in me, because of how he let me go up on American League call-ups. He was a phenomenal coach in person and is. And I saw him a couple years ago. I was so happy to see him. Like, and just spend time hanging out and talking. He's on that list 100%. I had a lot of coaches. So, you know, you try to go down and look at who your best coaches were. And because I moved around so much, it's spotty. You know, it's hard to pick coaches that really left a major impression on me because I moved around so much. But Gulletson, really, I think the importance of my career. And again, it was at the ECHL level of all places, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he really, without his belief, it would have never set me up for everything I had past that. So loved him. The other guy that immediately comes to mind is Scott Allen, who's an assistant coach with the Capitals. Mm-hmm. Scotty and I were in 5 cities together, guys.
Oh, wow.
We were in Omaha, Florida, Springfield, Portland, Peoria. And a couple of years ago when I was playing in the Calder Cup Finals, if we won the thing, Scotty and I made a pact. He was coming to the party. He's going to drive his motorcycle there. And I told him, if you ever win the cup, I will be there 100%.
Yeah.
I think the world of Scott Allen. I'm glad he's in the NHL with Wash. I hope they get it going there.
I know.
This guy, I'm telling you, Scotty Allen is one of the best you'll ever meet. The most dedicated men to hockey and family guy I've ever met. And I think the world of him. So there's a couple right off the
bat. Amazing. Yeah, no, that's great. Awesome.
Yeah. That one other thing I wanted to bring up too is he wore 50. Well, your favorite number is 56. I'm sure you wore a lot of numbers. I remember when there it is right there.
56. Oh, yeah.
And beauty. So I remember, like, I think I saw that he, I think when I knew we were getting you, I don't know if you told me or I feel like I was kind of researching you and everything. And I saw 56 and I think maybe I reached out and said, hey, 56, you're like, yeah, like, okay. And then he told me the story. If you want to talk about it, a little bit of race car, like action.
So it came from, first off, 56 is a weird number for a goalie. I get it. But we're also in a world now where goalies wear any number you want.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? Vasilevsky's wearing 88.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Koskinen was wearing like 17 for a while. A number's a number. It doesn't matter. My daughter's wearing 23. She's a goalie. Yeah. That's what she wore as a forward. She likes the number. She doesn't know who Michael Jordan is, funny enough. She has no idea. but it started out that I never wore 56 growing up. I always wore 29 because that was a normal goalie number. Greg Millen was my first goalie hero with the St. Louis Blues. He was a full right goalie who caught with his right hand like myself. My daughter also catches with her right
hand. No, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we're both right-handed. I catch a baseball with my left. But so Greg Millen was my guy, but that number was used a lot. And so I kept running into it. It's taken. I can't have it. And after my first year pro in Vegas, I was like, man, I'm playing for the Las Vegas Wranglers. What the fuck number doesn't matter what number I wear? Really? Yeah. I'm like, I'm in Vegas. I'm like, my dad, who raced in SCCA, which is amateur road racing in the United States, he won 5 national championships, a President's Trophy, his top amateur driver in the U.S., did some pro racing in Trans Am. I mean, raced with Bruce Jenner, raced with Paul Newman, all these guys, right?
Wow.
He used 56 as his racing number. And then later my grandpa started to wear 56 as his hockey number. And I went, this is too perfect. Yeah. So I asked our equipment guy in Vegas, Elvis Garcia.
Yeah. I know Elvis.
And Elvis is awesome. He's in Coachella Valley now, which is in his backyard. Happy for him. Great guy. I said, hey man, can I wear 56? He's like, I'll see what I could do. I'll see if Gully approves. Right. And so they're like, yeah, whatever, wear whatever you want. So that's where it started. There were times that I couldn't get 56.
Yeah.
You know, for obvious reasons, you had a coach or a GM that just said no, or like in the case of Ottawa, Magnus Pajärvi of all people was already wearing 56. Or in Dallas, they were going to retire it because it was Sergei Zubov's number, you know? But man, anytime I actually got that number, it really made me happy because if you're a superstar, you get what you want, man. Like it's that number's yours no matter what. Yeah. And for, you know, someone like me that I was pretty self-aware, I'm a number 3. Like, honestly, I'm a warm body until somebody else comes back from being hurt. It meant a lot when people researched enough to give me that number because it had meaning. It wasn't just, I'm wearing my favorite player's number. It was our family number.
Yeah.
Right.
That meant something to me.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Good insight. The Nasty hustles his ass off to get you your 56.
56, we had it made up.
Did you get any pushback on it?
No, actually none.
Have you ever had pushback on player numbers?
Belly. Remember, I think we told that story a few. The one time Pierre Belmar came in. He'd been playing pro like 9 years. I think we just talked about this. But we didn't have anyone in number 41. And he wore 41 his whole life. So I'm like, I go up with the list and I'm like, I put Belmar 41. I actually was like looking on YouTube to see who this guy is. And he wears 41. Well, he's got to make the team. He signed a one-way deal. This wasn't the head GM. This was someone else. And I'm like, well, it's no one's wearing it. You know, like it's empty. Literally every number except for the retired ones. And then there's 41. It's blank. So we give him 78. And I said, hey, sorry, man, I tried to get you 41. Hopefully in a couple of weeks you can get it. Well, he makes the team, and he's like, I don't want to change it now. But he wears 41 everywhere else.
Yeah,
he's wearing it now in Seattle, but and he wore it everywhere else. But I just thought it was so strange. I'm like, We know he's on the team. He signed a one-way deal. And even if he's not, there's no one at 41. Like, who, no one's coming in asking for 41. You're the first goalie ever to ask for 56.
Yeah.
It's you know what I mean?
Pretty rare.
Yeah, it was there. But that's the only time I really had any pushback. I do remember Jake Voracek. Mr. Schneider did not like high numbers, and he wanted to wear 93. So he started as a Flyer at number 9, and a few games into preseason, he's like, "That's too bad. I need 93. I can't stand this number." So Homer goes, "Okay." I'm like, "Whoa,
yeah, okay."
You said no. Now you're like, "Yeah, no problem." So that was about the only other time.
That's changed. Yeah. I mean, you start to retire numbers, and it's just a number. Like I remember in the minors in Dallas, you know, it was supposed to, we wanted to keep everybody under 30. You know, so I did wear 29 there, so I just reverted back to my, you know, my old number. Yeah. And honestly, numbers don't mean anything, but it, when they've got a family connection, man, it's definitely, it's cool when you can do it and it's appreciated.
Yeah.
One other thing, quickly, speaking of Ovi with the hot stick, it hasn't been very hot so far. He finally got his first last night. Yeah. It was a tap in, but maybe that'll get him going.
Yeah.
I don't know if you
there was like three or four games there. You didn't get a shot on net. It was hard to believe, actually.
Games in a row, he was held without a shot on goal. And I think that that may have been the first time in his career that that was the case. And if it wasn't the first time in his career, it had been a very long time.
Yeah.
That lineup in Washington, I don't know. It's weird, too, because I really like that coaching staff. Spencer Carberry, Mitch Love, Scotty Allen. Like, you've got the two previous winners of the American League Coach of the Year. And I always believe in giving young coaches a chance, especially when you're dudes like those guys. Mitch Love should be an NHL head coach. I think Calgary made a big mistake not keeping him in-house and promoting him to head coach of the Calgary Flames. They don't look any better under Ryan Huska than they did under Daryl Sutter. I would have gone to Mitch Love. There's more going on there, I think, though, than just coaching. But but I look at this team in Wash, and it's older.
Yeah.
And it's
slow. These guys have been together. Yeah.
And honestly, I don't care what anybody says about, you know, like hip resurfacing. Like, we're talking about Patrick Kane coming back from hip resurfacing surgery. Oh, he's going to be fine. He'll be the same old player. Watch Nick Backstrom. Like, he wasn't fast to begin with, but he's been reduced to play in tiny minutes, basically a power play specialist.
Yeah.
Right. Is that what Patrick Kane's going to be when he comes back? Because his body simply can't do it. Like, Ed Jovanovski is the only person before Nicholas Backstrom to ever come back from hip resurfacing surgery ever. And even his career was curtailed.
Yeah.
So I just don't think that that team's as fast. It's as immobile. And I think that the Caps are adapting to an entirely new coaching staff. And Riley, as you, I mean, like, it takes you, it can take you 10 or 15 games to start to get in sync with what a staff really wants, because the whole preseason is just a mismatch of players.
Yeah.
It's not until the regular season that you finally get your team. And you finally play games and you finally figure things out.
That's right.
But if you're on the wrong side of the ledger after 10 games, you might be out of the playoffs. So they got a big hill to climb in Washington.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, buddy, I appreciate you joining us, man. I know we took a lot of your time up. Busy hockey dad like me.
Oh, I had fun, man. This is the best.
It is, man. We appreciate you coming on, man. It's good to see you. I feel like I haven't seen you in so long, and taking the time to join us, man. You're a good dude, man. I certainly enjoyed you and enjoyed being friends with you now since I met you. So
yeah,
we appreciate
I'm
you.
Appreciative
brother.
Of everything, man. And I know that I know I'm going to be in Philly, I think, at some point pretty soon, and I might even be bringing a little goalie in tow. So
boys
on the ice together, man. I'll bring the gear along. I'll pull out the old rattlesnake pants. We'll do some custom mods.
It'll be fun.
We'll drink some clear rum while we're doing it. It'll be great.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, brother.
Nasty will put on a clinic, shoot some pucks with Toby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's got quite the release.
Yeah.
Fucking dick.
You should see me play forward. That's all I do now. You just give me the puck and put your hands in the air. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. That's not me. No. I'm trying to stay. I got to try to keep the pins moving.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to keep the pins moving.
Seriously, brother, we appreciate you so much, man.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for hopping on. Big thanks to Mike McKenna for hopping on.
The Rattlesnake. Love that guy.
We didn't even ask him about the story about where that nickname came from.
We did not. That's right.
How the hell did you forget that?
So, because I'm an idiot. But what I was going to say, he came in and I had ordered him this this heat press, and it was a rattlesnake. And so his jersey's hanging over and he takes it down, and it was on the inside of his pants, just a big rattlesnake. And he thought it was the coolest thing. That's why he kind of brought it up there. But I put it on his he had a coffee mug too that was a rattlesnake.
So his nickname only came when he was in Philly?
No, he had had it before. I saw it somewhere that was his nickname. And he had this mug, so I had the print made, and I heat pressed it into his pants.
It's a strong nickname.
He thought it was cool. Rattlesnake. If you piss him off, he's you hear it. Like when Ovi did that. Yeah. The rattlesnake was ready to jump.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
He's ready to go.
Pissed off about that.
A little bit.
I'd be too.
It's a pretty cool story. I did not know that. I did not know that. That's pretty cool.
Look it up.
Yep.
I'm posting that bad boy.
Oh, yeah. Baller's got it. He already has it.
It's already uploaded.
It's uploaded.
All right, now it's that time.
Is it? Right now?
Right now.
For this?
Mm-hmm.
Clear Questions, brought to you by Clear Rum, our good friends. Go to clearrum.com, type in Nasty 2023, and you get 35% off your order in Pennsylvania. Get on it. I'm telling you guys, I know we say it every week. It's unbelievable. Even if you weren't a rum guy, it's unbelievable. It's so good. Crisp, nice, clean taste, brother.
Yeah.
You got to get back on the wags.
You think so?
Yeah. I don't know. You don't have to, because I drink enough of it.
Anti-aging elixir?
It is. That's what it is.
Hydrate while you dehydrate?
Yes.
I like it.
It's good for
Bring
you.
Some balance.
It's unbelievable. And great people.
They are.
You heard Mike McKenna.
Yeah.
He's coming to drink some.
Oh, yeah.
I had a couple texts last night. There were a couple buddies at the Phillies game, which we didn't bring. They lost. But they're like, clear rum everywhere. I'm like, oh, yeah. I say, get it in you. But
until next season.
Yeah. Another good run.
I know. It was a shame. But it's sports.
I'm going to blame Debo on that one, but we'll just leave it at that. Baller, what do you got?
This is a good question, considering we just had McKenna on and you guys kind of talked about his mask and his pads and everything you did there. Over on Twitter, we have Chicken Pig Hog. Who do you think had the coolest goalie pads and mask? Will we ever see all orange pads like Razor rocked for a brief period? On the Flyers, of course.
On the Flyers, the coolest setup. You know what? The ones I really liked was when we played, we were in Pittsburgh 2017. Michael Neuwirth's whole get. We wore those first time we wore the black jerseys. Don't do it, Riggs. You're close to the yellow. You were right on it. Baller, get that. Debo, get that. Anyway,
there was no yawn.
We were in Pittsburgh for the outdoor game, and Nuvi's setup. I actually have video. I'll send it to Baller, and his mask. It was black, but that whole setup was like, I thought it was really cool, and it matched those jerseys like really well. Those really stick out. I have to think. Other than that, I think those were like the coolest pads. The whole setup with the jersey, the black mask, it was pretty sharp.
Yeah, you didn't like Bush's setup when he first came in the league?
Well, I mean, I guess. It wasn't as advanced as now. They were white, black, and orange. So they matched, but nothing out of the ordinary, bro. You take it on the... You got the Doves. You got into it. You got into it again. Debo Hynett. Goalie gear. I never knew goalie gear got Riggs this excited, boys.
I'm just thinking the evolution of some of the, just like standard looking gear. Yeah. Like where it's gone and
now,
kind of style. And like
a lot of cool stuff now.
Yeah, I know.
Like just, Mike was
appreciate
saying.
The basic, black helmet and whatever. Standard pads.
You didn't like Bernie's setup?
In the 70s? Man, the pads, how funny did they look? They were so goofy looking.
Yeah, I know.
It was the way they were stuffed. They were heavy, too.
A lot of fluff.
I mean, I guess Bernie's was okay because it's what everyone had.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, guys started getting color pads. You're like, whoa, they're black, white, and orange now and all that. But it was a long time ago. But the one that to answer the question, the one that sticks out the most was I really liked Nuvi's setup in that game,
Who had really bad pads back in the day? I think it was a Buffalo. Was it Darren Poopa? He had like the. It was almost like it had no lines in it. It was almost like. Oh, it was a clear sheet of leather. You know what I'm talking about? Was it Tug Nut?
I think they were called Aeroflex in Brasso Warm.
Oh, Brasso. They were the ones Brasso, right?
I think they were called Aeroflex. I think Reggie Lemelin warmed as well because they were super, super light. Yeah. They were like the lightest pad to come out.
So ugly looking, though.
Yeah, they weren't the best looking, but I never had a guy that wore those. No. But I do remember, though. I could be wrong about that name, but I think they were called Aeroflex or something like that. Yeah, those were tough to look at.
Yeah, you know. Google that.
Yeah.
We got one from Construction Kurt over on Instagram. Riley, what was your go-to chirp to opposing players to get them off their game?
I don't know if I had a go-to chirp. It was just what randomly came to mind in that moment after, again, 8-10 Sudafeds. And
I'm going to fucking kill
you. Yeah, that was probably, yeah. That was.
Don't touch him.
Yeah.
Don't touch G. Don't touch Richie.
Yeah.
You're dead.
You're dead. I'm going to fucking kill you. Not much of a chirp.
Did you ever
more
go,
of a threat.
Ooh.
No.
Like our boy the Big Earn.
You know.
Big Earn used to do that to Riles. Ooh, Cote. He's like. Telling me, and I'm like watching him. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't really in a position to, you know, the chirping was more just challenging guys, yeah. You know, because I wasn't able to play the game of like chirp a guy and then just kind of sit back and not deal with it and answer the bell. But yeah, I was usually very aggressive in their face. And
you were pretty aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. It
couldn't have been everything you were very throwing gentle in the body.
Yeah, I know. My nervous system was heavily stimulated. To say the least,
it was.
I'm still dealing with the aftermath of that. Yeah. Nervous system is fried. So, God for cannabis.
No shit.
One final one from Doc Mudd over on Twitter. How's your golf game, Nasty?
Okay, I'm wondering if you've seen me play before I answer this.
I was wondering if that was supposed to be directed towards me.
I thank you for asking. It's not great right now because I played four times all year this year.
That's it?
Barely.
Why don't you get on the links?
I haven't had time.
Oh.
Riggs.
Grandfather
running around
time.
Quite a bit. Running around a little bit. It sucks because I didn't get to play. I love playing golf, but I didn't get to play nearly as much as this summer. Riggs played his normal couple times. Lit it up at the alumni tournament.
This is my best showing.
I wish everyone could have seen Debo and Baller and dressed in all black at 99 degree weather. But
they're just attracting the sun for us, Nas.
You were. You're unbelievable that day.
It actually worked out well. We played a pretty good round of golf.
Yeah, my game's okay. I'm not that bad. You can play around with me even if you're good. I don't take long. Even if I hit a bad shot, I'm pretty quick.
You get frustrated?
Yeah. I've gotten better with that because when you don't play, you can't expect to be good. But it is frustrating because it's like, just hit the ball.
Yeah.
Hit the ball straight. Riggs,
just tap it.
Don't. Just tap it in. Just tap it in.
It's a pretty frustrating sport.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but I love it.
Hard to play when you're waking up at 10 in the morning.
Well, let's just not get carried away. Ballers all over me today. First of all, that's not the first time I woke up. I had to wake up twice. I was up all night working at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get this pod going. No, I was at the rink, unfortunately, literally at 4. And then Baller got here. I heard him come in, and I'm like, you said I'm running behind. I text Mike. I was like, I'm going
to
give myself 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. Yeah. I hit my thing, but I just, when it went off, I stopped instead of reset. And then I'm like, I jumped up. I was like, oh, Baller's down there. I better get going here.
A little DD, ready to rock.
That's all it took. Then I was like, let's go. Rattlesnake.
Yeah.
Come on. No, but thank you for the questions, guys.
Yeah, it was great. That's a wrap, Nas.
Is that it?
131 in the books.
131, baby.
Can you believe that?
I can't.
Well, you should.
I'm going to now. I believe it's happened. Oh, man.
Well, that's a wrap. Until next week for 132, be sure to give it a listen, a watch, a subscribe.
Yeah.
What else, Nas? Missing
anything? Throw a like in there.
A like. Why not?
A comment. Questions, anything. We love it. We
appreciate
you guys.
Yeah. Until next week, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See ya.